Eric Bishop. So I am a writer by night. I do finance during the day because I have to be able to pay for a way to do a creative venture. In this day and age, it's hard to make a living being a writer or anything creative. I do work for corporate America by day and write books at night on occasion. Now that I'm kind of going down an indie road, I'm kind of doing all these other business things besides writing a lot of evenings, but that's cool.
And latest book is Ransom Daughter?
Ransom Daughter, right over my shoulder, actually. Yeah. So it's a novella, actually, that came out back in October. And then I'll have another book coming out. I'll have the sequel to my debut book, The Body Man. The sequel will come out in probably late spring, early summer, if I can get my stuff together.
All right. Awesome. Liz, welcome back.
Thanks, Chuck. I'm Liz Glazer, and I'm a comedian. And this past year, I came out with an album that's not right behind me. It could have been. What if it's there? You know, here, you can't see it. It's you, not me.
I'll Photoshop it in.
Oh, yeah. That's fun. So it's right here. And that's my debut album called A Very Particular Experience, which is available on anywhere that you can get a song or an album or whatever. And I was on this podcast to chat with Chuck about it. And we had a really characteristically, I love you, Chuck. I mean, I remember, I'm sure I brought this up the last time I was here too, but like, Eric, I remember the first time that Chuck and I spoke and I didn't even know that much about myself. As much as he did. Okay. Just the level of research. And I guess you said that it's your dad that has instilled in you this ethic about research.
I think it's like, yeah, I get it from him. I think because he wrote a book. He wrote this book, which okay. I do have right here. I didn't write it, but he wrote this and there's like 500 references in it. It's all about what happens when we die. And it's
really?
Like all scientific proven things that, you know, doctors and experiments and research. And yeah, it's pretty crazy. It's very technical, but it's interesting.
Yeah.
So wow. Yeah, my stuff is more like comedians, rock stars, actors and stuff. I've had some authors, you know, more scientific people like that. I like that stuff, but my dad will recommend people to have on the show and I'll have them on and I'll be like, I don't understand what they're talking about, but it's interesting. I find it fascinating.
Totally. Yeah. Well, anyway, that's like, I mean, my year I had a baby or my wife had a baby. We had a baby, but I like to be technical about it. It's like, let's not, you know, not say who had.
Well, and it was like, you kept it a surprise because you were on the show and you didn't say anything. I guess I should ask.
Well, but no, I mean, I probably wouldn't have said anything because we had spoken about, because my Eric, you may not know this, and maybe somebody listening also doesn't know, but my album is about a stillbirth that my wife and I experienced. Okay. Wow. And so, but anyway, so like, I think in light of that, it was like just, I don't know, we were more protective around the information around our expecting, I guess. So anyway, because it's
no, but in the album is like, it's so brilliant because take us on this roller coaster of like you're laughing and then it's like sad, but then you, and that's life, and that's what I really enjoyed about it. So
thank
it's
you.
Very cool.
Thank you.
But anyways, so today I just want to talk about all the crazy stuff that's going on in the world in the past year. We can rewind. And so, you know, we could talk about some light things, some dark things, just like your album there. But I guess the first thing I'll bring up is Taylor Swift. I feel like this is the year of Taylor Swift.
So she was the dark section.
We're going dark.
Yeah.
We're
starting to No, but she's
Chuck's podcast is brought to us by the NFL, apparently.
She's person of the year.
Wow.
I mean, she's dating Travis Kelce. So now she's in the NFL. She's got a tour. She's got a movie. She's adding like money to like these economies, like economies are getting millions of dollars for this, different cities and countries. Like,
what are she's like the new Warren Buffett moving markets, you know, I
mean, what do you guys think? Do you have opinions? I like Taylor Swift, I guess. I mean, I'm not a Swiftie, but how big of fans are you guys?
My wife is a huge fan. And so, going back to some of the dark, like when we had the stillbirth, it was when that 10-minute song with the scarf was happening. That's like my level of fanship is I'm like, I don't know what it is. All I know is it was playing on repeat a lot when she was in the shower during that period. So, I mean, I like Taylor Swift. I've liked Taylor Swift for years, I guess, like before she was like enormous, enormous. Like she was still a famous person, but I feel like something, right? It's like a volcano exploded. Like we always knew it was there and it was notable, but then also now it's like, what? So anyway, yeah, but I can enjoy Taylor Swift. My daughter loves Taylor Swift, which I noticed because I played some Taylor Swift and then she does hear like, dancing or whatever. She's 6 months old, so you can really tell if she likes something. But yeah, I mean, I did like a short video on this because it was just like a silly thing, but I ended up posting it of like with her and Travis. Like, because this was at the time when everyone was like, oh, is it a stunt or whatever? And I was like, what if I just sense from Taylor Swift. Again, do I know the gal? Yes, I do. No, but I just sense like, what if she's in it for love? Like, what if she's just like trying to find the guy in her life? And this is the thing of now, and maybe it'll work and whatever. So I don't know. It's not a hot take, but that's what I believe.
Eric, what do you think? Are you a Taylor Swift fan? Are you a Swiftie?
I'm not a Swiftie. I'm not an anti-Swiftie
Sure.
either. I know some of her songs. I will say the one thing that kind of warmed my heart towards her was months ago when the news came out that she basically had given $100,000 to each truck driver and people that did catering and all that. She gave away
Yes.
something like 50 million or 25 million,
I saw that too.
millions of dollars she gave out. And so especially with the exposure I had last year with bands, with doing some traveling and seeing how it works, seeing the people that set up the rigs and, do the lighting, do the catering, seeing all that experience and knowing that she, who, yes, you could say, well, she had the money, it wasn't a big deal. Yeah, but
A lot
she
of people
didn't
don't
have
do
to,
it.
right. And she didn't have to give a dime away. And
Yep.
no one's coming there to see Taylor Swift's truck driver. They're
Yeah.
all there to see Taylor Swift. So she gets the vast majority of the money because she's drawing the crowd. So for her to, whether it's 50 million or 25 million, however much it cost her to, and that's when you're giving $100,000 to a truck driver or to someone that's knows catering or costumes, that's life altering money, at least for that year. And, that could
Yeah.
go down payment on a house. So that was a cool thing. The Travis thing, yeah, I don't know. And I don't know. I know she's dated a bunch of different guys, and there's always these rumors of are they part of their songs and all this stuff. I think for her, probably at the level she's at, for her to, I think she just got done with a relationship at some point back for years, and it was like a not a no-name guy, but at least not a Taylor Swift, not someone super
Yeah.
famous. I almost think she has to have someone pretty famous. Because how do you have someone that can't understand and to stay in the background where he's a big dude, he's pretty well known in the NFL, he's charismatic, he does commercials. Probably a good
Right.
fit for her because they can feed off each other in the sense of getting the attention and all that. And so,
And you don't want a Kevin Federline either. You know what I mean? Like you don't want to pull someone out from nowhere and then
unless you want to be paying another 50 million a year to some dude, no.
and his truck driver.
Exactly.
Poor Kevin
And his
Federline.
former baby mama and all the other
Oh, no.
people
Shots
that are probably down
fired.
the.
Shots fired. Okay, what
Yeah.
about, here's another big story. This is cool. Eric, you could definitely chime in on this one because the Sphere, this was a big thing that came in Vegas. It's this giant like ball thing. It looks so cool. You actually got to go and see U2 in Vegas. How was that? It looked
My
amazing.
son touched Bono. How's that for
Wow.
that little shit got to touch Bono and I didn't know. He's an amazing human being. Yeah, so that was we went on November 4th, right before my birthday. I'd got tickets like 6 months ago. It was a fiasco trying to get tickets. I almost gave up the day they went
Yeah.
out. Last minute, I kept trying, and my son was in the other room, and I was just in here yelling because I would think I'd have tickets, and it would say, you've got two tickets. They're 150 each. And I'm like, yeah, sure. And I'd get to like purchase button, and it would say, those tickets are taken. Next one's available are 1500 per ticket. And I'm like, no. So that went on for like 30 minutes. And so I started looking at some other dates. I guess there was so much demand that day, they released some other dates. And then, you know, I'm looking at dates, trying to think, when do I have custody of my kids? And it was a nightmare. And then I get two tickets for floor seats, or not even seats, your standing room. And I got them. And so that was like June. And so I had months to prepare. And so flew out to Vegas. It was difficult with work. I ended up having to work in the hotel, the Luxor, and, you know, kind of one of these calamities. But that morning we went, and the line started, well, whatever time you wanted to be there, you had to be in line. And at 8:30, they would give out numbered wristbands for when you could come back in the evening for the show and get in. So we were there at 6:20, I think, in the morning, and we were number 86 and 87. But in talking to some of the people that had already gone to the show, they're like, no, that's good, because you're going to get close to the front. And sure enough, we ended up getting, we could have got right on the rail in front of the edge when we got let in at 6 o'clock that night. But instead, we went to the center, and we were about three or four people back. And then, yeah, Bono, during Until the End of the World, came into the crowd and laid backwards on the crowd. And right before he got up, my son, he got a push, a gentle push from one of the people we were with, pushes my son a little forward, and he reaches out and he grabs Bono's arm. And then Bono got up, and my son turns around and he goes, "Dad, Bono." And I'm like, holy shit.
So that's awesome. Wait, how much were the tickets though?
The ones we got for the floor tickets, I think, were about $250 a ticket.
That's it?
No, that's the people behind us that had seats in the 100 section, $1,500. At least some of those.
I would be spending the entire concert asking everyone how much they paid. The whole time.
It does look cool though, right? Have you seen the footage, Liz, of the Sphere?
I don't think I have.
Yeah. Check that out after we get the podcast. Like, it looks, and they also, like, the outside, they do these different things, and they've made it look like a pumpkin for Halloween. And like, it just looks really cool. I don't know. It's like magical.
If you're not familiar with it, Liz, it's a pure, it looks like the Death Star. It's rounded. It almost looks like a globe kind of thing without the mini, without the little, you know, divot in it, but it's all digital. So outside, I think there's like, I don't know, 180,000 lights or something. It's all, so they can make the outside look like a globe, a smiley face, a volcano, put words on there, and it looks really cool. Well, then inside is where it looks like a Death Star, because it's kind of like tiered, where you have the floor seats, then you have the 100s and 200s, and it goes up. But everything's digital. So when we get in there, you know, we're in there a couple hours before the show started. It looked like a cathedral, and I've been to Europe several times. It looked like an old European cathedral.
Interesting.
It was domed. It had a hole in the top, and you know it's digital, so you know it's fake. Yeah. I'm watching this bird fly from like one buttress to another, and so I bump the guy next to me, and I'm like, how the hell did a bird get in here? And he's like, dude, that's totally fake. It's all digital. And I'm like, there's no way it's digital, but it is.
So,
and
it looks as real in real life as it does. Because when you see the videos, you're like, I mean, they had like dinosaur thing, and it looks like a dinosaur is right. It's crazy. Yeah, I don't know.
Wow.
It looks 100% real. And then there's no visible speakers. So the speakers are also built in. Mm. So the sound is great. The audio is great. And then
that's amazing.
My favorite show before that was actually a U2 show. And this show blew it out of the water. There's nothing that compares to this show.
I'm not even a big U2 fan, but I feel like I would see that just to see the Sphere or whatever. But anyway, so there's that. And then the other big entertainment news, Barbenheimer. Everyone's this is like the weirdest combination. I don't know who came up with this, but it's like the Barbie movie and Oppenheimer.
Yeah.
I only saw Oppenheimer. I didn't see Barbie.
I only saw Barbie. I didn't see Oppenheimer.
Okay, perfect. So we got.
I saw neither.
Okay, so we got one of each. Because I thought Barbie, I was like, this doesn't look like something I'd be interested in. I saw Oppenheimer because I heard it was so good. I was kind of disappointed with it. I thought it was kind of almost like pro bomb. It was very. It was almost like they were kind of putting this movie out to be like, see, the bomb wasn't that bad, right? Like they didn't really show the aftermath and all.
Right,
like, that's the part that that we should learn from,
like pro bomb in the sense of like the science that made the bomb. Okay.
Yeah. Like, but the still guy that made it, he was so brilliant and he was trying to help people. And I'm like, but I mean, the aftermath, like, yeah, I thought they were going to show all that so that that was going to be the lesson that people learned, like, yeah, we should never do this again. And it was like, kind of, that wasn't, they kind of glossed over that. It was,
work hard and you can make a bomb. That was the lesson.
Yeah, it was kind of interesting for Hollywood. Yeah, but yeah, so weird. Tell me about
the lesson. Was it only killed the commoners? Come on, Chuck. It just killed commoners. It's okay. But the elites were fine, so we're okay with it.
Yeah. Barbie, I thought, was fun. I saw it on my birthday. And so, you know, it was like really, I mean, it's interesting. Like the stuff that we've already touched on in terms of news stories, I feel like lend themselves to this discussion as well, which is like now movies have become this outing again. Mm-hmm. Right? Because like for many years, it's like the movies are just like, I don't know, no big deal, whatever. And then they got so expensive. And now I feel like they are really expensive. But like, for example, I mean, I did see Barbie, but the reason I was thinking about it is like everybody, I think my wife got us some kind of pink shoes, special shoes that we wore. Yeah, that we wore. Like, I think they were flip flops that were like fuzzy or whatever. And we wore them to see Barbie. And, you know, I think it added to the experience. And also, it is a good movie. I mean, it's funny. It's, like, smart and whatever. I don't know if it was, like, anything that I was like, I need to see that again. It was pretty, I would say, pretty heavy-handed in terms of the lessons. But also very clever. And the songs are really good. And so,
Margot Robbie, I mean, I do love her.
Yeah, so. Totally. Yeah. Like, everything was good about it. It's just, like, to me, it's not Clueless. Like Clueless to me was a revelation. And again, I saw it, you know, now I'm 44 years old. Am I going to see a movie that's going to be a revelation to me at 44? Maybe. But if I see it when I'm in high school, you know, I would say the odds are higher in terms of it hitting me that way. But I also think that Clueless was like a better movie. I mean, honestly, the other movie we saw the same day, because we saw two movies on my birthday, was Theater Camp, which I imagine doesn't make the news or anything like that. But that was terrific. That was like a really, really good movie. And, you know, I thought was like, in terms of just sheer storytelling, not anything like Hollywoodish beyond that, I thought was better.
Yeah. Really? Have either of you seen the movie Quiz Lady? Because that is one of the funniest movies I've seen in a long time, actually.
I didn't see it. What is it about, like a person on a game show?
Yeah. So it's like these two Asian ladies, and the one is like, she's kind of like a party girl, and the other, they're sisters. And the other girl's like, she's like really nerdy and she watches this quiz show every night. And the other sister like signs her up and then she gets picked to go and it's like a road trip. It's really silly and funny. I think, I don't know. I thought it was really funny. I was surprised it didn't get a bigger thing. It's on Hulu. I don't know if you guys have that, but
yeah.
Like, wow, this is actually like a really funny, I feel like they don't make a lot of funny movies in Hollywood anymore. And this one actually made me laugh out loud several times.
Well, we do have to, I don't know if the strike was the reason that it didn't get as promoted, Quiz Lady specifically, but like, you know, there is that to consider for this year.
Right.
Yeah. Were you part of that? Cause are you part of the actor?
I mean, I am, but like, I just kind of thought like some of the people I know who are, you know, I do know people who are heavily affected by it. And also I know people who wish they were heavily affected by it. And I would say that I fall into that camp, and I've never pretended that I'm not in that camp, you know? So like, I mean, I did something on television this year that was like before the strike. So that's lucky. And then, you know, I'm sorry, I am a SAG member. That also happened to me this year, but it was too late to vote in the should we strike thing. Fine. I don't really care. I mean, you know, I care, but I'm just being real about like the level that I care. And yeah, like it affected me in terms of like I had fewer auditions, but the nature of me auditioning is like sometimes I do book stuff, but it's not, you know, it wasn't like affecting my day-to-day livelihood. I mostly do stand-up, and you could still do stand-up.
Yeah. Well, one thing that was interesting about the strike is that and Eric and I talked about this on the episode where I had him on, was the AI part, because the AI that Hollywood was going to use like AI to recreate people and stuff and basically just mm-hmm. steal their likeness and make movies.
Yeah.
And Eric and I talked about for authors, how they could use, you could make an AI book and, you know, make it sound like a John Grisham novel or something. I mean, right. it's kind of scary. Like, I don't know. That's the, hopefully they sorted it out with the Actors Guild.
I don't think they did. I think whatever the current best deal is, has some pretty scary and questionable AI stuff. I mean, I tend to not get that scared about that stuff, not because it won't necessarily affect me, but like, I just refuse to get too scared about stuff like that. Like nobody's killing me directly. And if there's not like a literal gun in my face and I'm not going to die, I'm not going to get that bent out of shape, or other people die, you know, like, I don't know. I think just like having tragedy in my life gives me some perspective where it's like, okay, so I might make a few fewer dollars. I think I'll be okay.
But you don't think, you're not worried about like being eventually like replaced by a robot?
No.
Okay. Well, that's good. I hope none of us are, but yeah, it definitely worries me.
Yeah.
Hopefully not in our lifetime, at least.
Yeah. I don't know. I just can't get it up to like worry so much about that. I'm not saying it's not going to happen to me. I just don't care.
Terminator 2 is going to happen, and we're all going to die when the machines turn the bomb on. So it doesn't matter.
Yeah. That's a healthier perspective to not worry about it. Yeah. I worry about stuff too much.
Well, no, I mean, I worry so much, but like, it's interesting because like that kind of stuff, no, I really don't worry about it.
Yeah. Well, one tragedy that did occur this year, I mean, there's so many, there's always like a bunch of celebrity deaths, but I think the one for me that stood out was Matthew Perry, just because he's so young. I think, what was he, 54 or something like that? And yeah. It was a very weird circumstances. Now, I guess I found out, I think it was yesterday, today, it came out that he had ketamine in his system.
Like, but I was like talking to some people who were like, well, but was it the ketamine really? I mean, I don't know. Because, you know, ketamine is pretty hot right now. I've taken it in my life, but I don't take it actively. But, you know, there's like ketamine therapy and stuff like that.
Don't they give it to people so that they won't have the drug addictions? Is that what it's used for?
Right. Well, I think it's funny, actually. I just had the guy who plays Dexter. He was on my show because he has a band and he has a song called Ketamine. And it's about him and his girlfriend did the ketamine therapy for depression.
Right.
And so, yeah, that is like a trendy thing, but I wonder if it was prescribed or he was just taking it for fun or, I mean, I don't know. It's kind of like, it's always just sad when you see these people who are so talented and, you know, just so beloved, and it seems like they're just not happy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, right. Like, and my question was just like, you know, in what context did he have ketamine in him and stuff? I took it like off. I just remember I was at a party. I went with this guy. This was like many years ago, to move my car. He had some ketamine. I took it. And my brother was like, I've never seen you look so stoned or whatever. Like, and, but that said, you know, it wasn't in any kind of supervised situation. Yeah, I mean, that's, I think, the reason that it's like an uproar is because people are doing it in these ways that are like good, allegedly.
Abused. So then it's like, well, yeah, because like I think he had more than what you're supposed to take. So, and I don't know if he just, and then like you get into the conspiracy, you're like, maybe somebody gave it to him because he found something, you know, like you go down that rabbit hole too. But either way, it's just tragic. I mean, obviously, he suffered with drug and alcohol issues is his life. And I mean, it's very well documented, but I mean, it's just sad. There's just too many stories like that. Like I hate seeing it. I mean, obviously, you know, cause there's other celebrities that died, like Tina Turner. I mean, but she was like 83 and she had an amazing life, and that's like a long life. But when someone's in their 50s, it's like, it scares me because I'm 45 and I'm like, am I going to die in 7 years? Like, that's kind of scary.
I really hope you don't.
Thank you.
I mean, really?
I'm 47, so I'd go before you, Chuck. I mean, I'd hit it first. So
maybe. I hope you don't also, Eric. And I hope I don't, you know? Yeah. It is really scary. But also it's like, you know, I want to read your dad's book, Chuck, but like, it's kind of, the thing that is the scariest is just the unknown. I think that's why I don't care so much about like contracts and, you know, who's gonna steal my likeness. 'Cause it's like, that's the stuff is like dying, you know, that I worry about. But then I wonder if your dad's book would help me not worry. Do you think it would?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, because I
All
think
right.
it kind of gives a little bit of clarity. And yeah, I mean, basically, like I asked him at the, I think I asked him and I had him on my podcast and we talked about it. And I just asked him, like, what is like the main takeaway
Yeah.
from this book? And he's like, well, like there is an afterlife. He's like, I don't know what it is. I don't know. Like, I can't tell you exactly what happens or, but he's like, I think that there is the book, the title of the book, Ultimate Reality, is that I think there is another reality that we cross over to. He's like, I don't know all the scientifics and what exactly it looks like and you know all that stuff, but there is something out there. So that, I mean, to me, that's like it gives you hope, I guess.
I love hope.
So since Liz is the stand-up person, I don't want to pretend to ever have done stand-up because I haven't, but there is a joke out there about that years ago. I don't remember who did it, but they were talking about what people are afraid of. And
Yeah.
on the list of
Right.
things
I think
that
it's
people are afraid
Seinfeld.
of, public speaking is above death. And
Right.
so
Yeah.
whoever the comic was basically said, so if you're at a funeral, you know, the person that's speaking at the funeral, that's more, you're more fearful than one being in the casket. It makes you
Exactly.
hilarious.
Yeah. I think that's a
Something seems out of
Seinfeld.
whack.
That's classic. Yeah.
Yeah,
That's great.
totally.
Let's see, what else is going on in the world this year? God, so many AI stuff. We talked about that. This was a weird story because it just, I don't know. Sometimes I think some news stories, like they show like people's reaction to the story almost is a bigger story than the story itself.
Sure.
Like you guys remember the Titan, what was it called? The submersible or
Yes,
the
of
submarine
course.
that blew
So,
up.
yes.
They were going down to look at the Titanic. And you're like, okay, well, that's terrible. It's a sad thing. Also, like the people that ran this business were probably not the greatest people in the world. But I think what was interesting to me was just seeing the reactions from people that were like, good, they died, these fucking billionaires, these assholes, like these rich people, they get what they deserve. And it was just like, whoa. Like, I
Yeah.
mean, I understand like some hatred towards rich people, but it just seemed kind of like out of place. Like you're like, isn't this a tragedy when someone dies innocently? Like, I don't think you're trying to hurt anybody by going to look at the Titanic.
There
I
was a
agree.
teenager in it too. The billionaire's wasn't the billionaire's teenager or someone's teenager was on it. So
It was his son,
yeah.
but I mean, I said that with such authority
I
that
think
like,
so, yeah. I know, I think
yeah.
you're right. Go with it. Own it.
Yeah.
Own it,
So,
Liz.
I mean, well, I just like to also own when I barely might have remembered something. But I mean, I agree with you, Chuck. And just to put the other side out there, not because I agree with it, because I think you're right. It's tragic when people die, no matter what. But, you know, the idea of like somebody being a billionaire probably means that they've caused deaths of people who have gotten them to that level of stratospheric wealth. You know, I do understand that kind of, I guess. Like, you know, it's like this wasn't it the story with like the Amazon workers like dying like at Amazon on the floor or something? You know what I'm talking about? This was
No, but
like
I know that there was some really horrible conditions that I heard that
Yeah.
didn't make sense to me because I was like, okay, Amazon's got money. Like they should be like Costco has really good money and they had like really
Yeah.
good worker conditions from what I
People love working
understand.
there a lot of
Yeah, they pay
times.
their
Yeah.
employees really well. So I'm like, why would you not pay your employees well and why would you not give them? It doesn't make any sense. Like just to get a little bit of
Yeah.
extra. Like, so yeah, I
Yeah.
agree. I mean, if that's the case, then yeah, fuck them. I guess they just, I don't know. I don't know the whole
No, I
how
don't
they
mean
made their
it.
money
I
or
don't mean
whatever.
it as simply as like fuck all of them. I just mean that, you know, I've just read and heard stuff to that effect where it's like if you have that much money, it doesn't come from not like at some point you've like screwed someone very severely. So I just put that out there. Not
That's
because it's
interesting.
right. Yeah.
Yeah. I had this music producer who's produced like tons of like 70s and like Cheap Trick and all these 70s and 80s bands. And he had the same, he was telling me basically, he's a very successful producer, but he was telling me a lot of the same things. I said, who was your favorite bands to work with? And he said, most of the bands that were my favorite were the nice people were the ones that you never heard of.
Yeah.
See, he thought that the people that were successful in the music business had to step over somebody else to get there, and they screwed people over. So,
yeah. Well, and also it's like, you know, I don't know the story specifically with that music producer or the bands who he was talking about, but it could be that the bands might not be like super famous, but that they're working and successful bands in a way, even if they're not like household names, you know?
Oh, definitely. Yeah, for sure. I think that a lot of, there's some bands that like, I mean, it's great though, cause I go really deep into music, and some of the bands I mean, they had like two MTV videos in the '80s and they're still have some career based off of that, which is cool. Yeah.
I saw Rick Astley in 2017.
Nice.
Cause I was a really big Rick Astley fan. Like when I was a kid, you know, I guess I was like a young adolescent at the time that he was like big, and was really into him. And then like, you know, he was touring. So I went, and it's like, interesting. It's interesting to see someone like, he's not, I mean, he probably has like a ton of money from before. Right.
Yeah. The one hit, I mean, I feel like they're still playing. Like, I don't know how that all works with the, I hear
Rick Rolling.
Yeah. That song is played so much, but how much does he get from that? I don't know.
Good question. Yeah.
And also like, I feel like he might be one of those ones too, that is big overseas and might have like other hits. Yeah. Like what's the one guy, what is his name that he has a song and he's like, he only has like he's a one hit wonder here, but in Europe, he's like huge.
Oh, interesting. Yeah.
There's a lot of guys like people like that.
Yeah.
Well, for me, Rick Astley was definitely not a one hit wonder. I knew all of his songs. I don't know the new an album called 50.
Oh.
That was in 2017 because I think he was turning 50. And people in the crowd knew all the words and whatever. I did not. But I think he's since come out with more music, if I'm not mistaken. Anyway, but just saying.
That was a great tangent to talk about Rick Astley.
Yes. Thank you.
I don't know if you wanted to add anything, Eric, about the Titan sub or whatever, if you had any.
No, well, you were talking about the music. I was going to add on that is there's so many talented people out there. So I had, you know, I've talked with you offline, obviously, and you know my connection with the band Shinedown.
Yeah.
So I took my son Saturday down to Charleston and we went to Eric Bass's house, his studio. And, you know, he just spent, my son's interested in music and Eric is such a phenomenal human being that literally spent like 7 hours with us. And a lot of that was focused on my son. So my son and him are in the studio jamming out to Shinedown songs. They were playing some Guns N' Roses, some AC/DC. And it was just like, as a dad, I'm just sitting back there and just soaking it in basically. But my son asked him a lot of pertinent questions too, like, how do you make a career out of this? And what's the right, what missteps have you made and all that? And I mean, Eric sat there for like an hour and just kind of like, he said, you okay if I give him advice? I was like, dude, that's why we're here. Give it everything to him. He's going to absorb it and we'll, you know, just, what do you think? And, but Eric talked about how, you know, people that quote unquote make it, there's so many people out there that are really, really, really good, just as good as him in his mind. That they don't get that chance. They don't get that opportunity. And my two cents on that, which I always try to add to my son, because I don't believe in luck. I just don't believe it. I think you put in the work, you put yourself out there, and sometimes it connects with the right people. But at the end of the day, you didn't just, I mean, unless you win Powerball, which you could say that's luck, obviously. I can't argue that. But you created something, you did something to put yourself on that path to whether it's to create something or to meet somebody to introduce something you created. So you did something to start that ball rolling. And so what I try to tell my son is that's why if you're into music, you have to go pretty hard into it because you don't know what's going to happen. It might not get to pay your bills. You might never record, you know, an album and have it sell, but you can make music. And if you make music, maybe that music will take off and maybe that will put you on a path that's like what Shinedown happened or bigger than them or less than them. But follow your passions. And that's what Eric was saying too. Eric was saying, do what you feel like you should be doing. Yeah. Don't worry about whether am I going to be successful. Don't worry about all the other things that you can't control. What you can control is to work hard and to put your passion into that project. So it was.
And that was what the people did when they went to go see the Titanic. And, you know, that's unfortunately sometimes it doesn't work out.
Sometimes you blow up.
Yes.
Literally and figuratively.
Do you feel the same way, Liz, about comedy, though? Because it's probably the same. I mean, I see so many talented, not only musicians, but also comedians. And I'm like, why is this guy not bigger? You know, why is this? Yeah. And I don't know. I don't even have the answers. There's some people that make me crack up so hard. I think I've told you, like, Fahim, I think, is hilarious. I think he's one of my favorite comedians. He's got some success, but I think he should be like the biggest comedian in the world. And he's not. So I don't know why that is, but it is.
So number one, there's a really good documentary that my friend Josh Edelman made about a comedian named Al Lubell, who is a tremendous comedian. And he's great, and he's not famous. And Josh's documentary, which is entitled Mentally Al and won awards for, you know, like the New York Times best comedy documentary. And, you know, if you ever want to connect with Josh, I'm happy to introduce or whatever. But anyway, the documentary is so interesting because it's really about why Al isn't famous. And so there's so many documentaries about, like, here's like the behind the music or the behind the success or whatever. And it's kind of the opposite. And it's like Josh interviews in the documentary Kevin Nealon and Judd Apatow and Sarah Silverman. And, you know, Jerry Seinfeld's favorite joke, I guess, on record is a joke of Al's. And so it's like, he's amazing and he's not famous. And I would say that, like, in the, it's been a while since I watched the documentary. It's really great. But I would say that, like, the upshot, one of the lessons that I took from it is that the being famous is almost like another job and another choice separate from the talent that is the foundation for whatever fame someone might have. And so, you know, to your point, Eric, that, like, it's not about luck. It's like putting in the work to do the music. And then if the idea is for every single person to know your name or to sell out huge stadiums or whatever it is, like, that too isn't luck, you could say, and is a choice, and it requires the work to be put in for that specifically.
Wow. And I think some people that get to those levels realize that they don't want to be at that level, and they almost are pigeonholed to probably sticking with it sometimes, but they find it very, I think that's where, like, drugs come into the picture for people and stuff like that, is it's a very lonely existence to be at the top.
I'm thinking of Kurt Cobain right off, like, not to interrupt, but it made me think of Kurt Cobain. That's a guy that seemed to not want to be that successful. Like, he wanted to be a musician, but I think he was, like, thinking he's going to be like this, like, indie rock guy,
right?
That have a little bit of success, did not want to be the biggest rock star in the world.
Dave Grohl's book, The Storyteller, I listened to it back in October on a drive up to upstate New York for a wedding. So I had like a 14 hour drive, and I listened to the whole book. And he dives into Kurt, especially, pretty hard of what happened with him. And yeah, absolutely. I mean, he was the stories of how they hadn't made it, and then when they made it, they blew up. And it just, for Kurt, it was probably the work. For Dave, it worked out. It didn't affect him in the way it affected Kurt, but for Kurt, it was horrific for him. Mm-hmm. So be careful what you wish for, you know?
Yeah.
And I guess, you know, I mean, not that I would know, but, like, you know, be prepared for that to hit, I guess, because, you know, I mean, I used to take this acting class that was, like, really not an acting class. It was like a kind of a cult with unlicensed therapy by a man who's since been canceled. But, it was basically a class. I was fine. I mean, he didn't have any interest in me, which was like the best gift. But but it was basically a class about how to be famous. And I remember he said, you know, he's like, make sure that you get, like, even though he's, like, kind of horrible in a variety of ways, like, he really did have some good gems and lessons and stuff. Mm-hmm. And a lot of it was related to, like, be okay with your whole, all the messiness, and, like, you know, get sober, get, like, whatever, just, or, I mean, I guess he wouldn't say necessarily get sober, although I did, And I think that he was influential in that. And I don't think he was sober. But basically, like, if you can't handle drugs now and like you're not famous, like, just figure it out before, you know, was kind of his message. And so I always keep that in mind. I mean, not because I think he's the greatest teacher in the world or anything, but just because like there were a lot of lessons that I felt like I took from there. And I've seen, you know, friends who seem to not have that in them, and then stuff happens that's really big, and it's like, okay, I don't know that you're handling this exactly. Like, it seems like not fun for you, you know.
Really? So you've had friends that have really blown up personally?
Yeah. Oh yeah, totally. And like, I mean, especially now where it's like so, you know, democratized in terms of content creation and stuff, like somebody can really blow up overnight, and I don't know, like that affects people differently. I think that if you go into it with a plan of like, I want to monetize and here's what I want the money to go to, and like really have like a plan about it, then that, and again, I'm just speaking from my own not experience of it happening to me, but just sort of like being somebody who's thought about this quite a lot in my personal life and managing my life separate from fame, I guess. But yeah, like just seeing somebody, I don't know, like freak out about like a comment on a TikTok or something. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, what, you know?
Okay. And, well, this is a good transition then, because
yeah,
I think we kind of briefly touched on this when you were on my show last time, but you know, you were in a class. Was this the class you were in with Dylan Mulvaney?
No, that's a different one.
Okay. Cause that's one of the biggest stories of the year, the whole Bud Light thing. And, I mean, it's just such an interesting thing to me, because it just seems like there's so much division in this country. And that was like a perfect example of people just, you know, picking a side. And I just felt bad for Dylan in a way, because, you know, she was just like, oh, cool, they gave me a Bud Light can. And then people like hated on her. And she had a good point. She's like, Bud Light didn't stick up for me. And it's like, look, if you're Bud Light and you say, I'm going to, you know, we're going to have this person promote our brand, they like, then they just like pulled the plug and they're like, oh, we want nothing to do with you.
Yeah.
And I think that was kind of messed up. Now, like, you know, Kid Rock shot up the beer cans or whatever. And now he's saying like, oh, we forgive Bud Light. I mean, I guess some people could just look at it from a marketing perspective and say, this is just bad marketing because it was off brand. But I don't know. What do you guys think? Because that was a big story.
Yeah. I mean, I was in class with Dylan, a different class, and a more recent class, but I don't know Dylan all that well, although she's perfectly lovely. And, you know, we were in class together on Zoom. So that's how I know her. And I remember that she started her kind of internet public journey by doing however many days, like 365 or however many of becoming a girl or being a girl. And that was like the content that she created on her own that got her a lot of publicity, that led to the Bud Light deal and other stuff that was more positive, I think, overall. And I know that there was a lot of backlash. I don't know personally. It's not like, you know, we talk on the phone or anything like that about anything, but also not, you know, that story. But yeah, I mean, I've felt bad as I've learned these details, because it's like, there's a person on the other end of it, you know? So that's kind of how I've thought of it, because I do know her, you know, even a little bit.
I think it shows the fickleness of the corporate, and I work for a corporation, but the corporate entities that are out there. I mean, they're bottom line. So if Bud Light looked at the numbers and all of a sudden, you know, whatever, 25% of the market share is disappearing because of this, then yeah, Bud Light's going to throw anybody under the bus, because all ultimately Bud Light cares about is selling more beer.
Well, and isn't that how it started in the first place? Because they said, oh, okay, we have like a bunch of dudes drink beer and we want to get more women to drink Bud Light. So we're trying to like get like this much more of a market share, and then it just blew up in their face.
Right. And I want to say, I don't remember all the details with the story, but I want to say Dylan wasn't the only, like, it wasn't just a marketing campaign just for Dylan. I think they like they did a bunch around the country of all different folks.
Yes, there was like hundreds of people, and they found that one person.
The one, yes.
And then that was a thing that, so that's just kind of what's interesting too. It's like, but like also like, why do you care? Like to me, I didn't have a dog in the fight because I don't like Bud Light. So I don't,
I was going to say, I don't drink Bud Light anyways. Yeah,
I wouldn't drink it anyway. So I didn't really have, but I just was, I sat back and watched that and I was like, this is really interesting to just watch this play out in real time.
Yeah. Well, and I guess, you know, depending what I hope, and I don't know whether this is true for Dylan or not, but what I hope for her is that however this has shaken out, that it aligns in some way with her kind of overall goals for her business, you know, where it's a lesson, it's a chapter in the book, it's the reason for the book deal, it's the reason for this public appearance or that public appearance. And like being at the heart of a major controversy can be, you know, a real credit ultimately in terms of like, this is how we know you, you're a major player, so you can make who knows how much money to do a public speaking engagement or something like that. Mm-hmm. And I just hope for her that that's there. You know, I imagine it is, but I don't know for sure. And I do hope.
Yeah. I think, I mean, she just got more famous and probably, I mean, she already had like a bunch of TikTok followers. Yeah. And now it's even more.
Yeah. So. Right. Right.
And then Bud Light, I guess they're coming back. I guess people are drinking that again. There was like literally just ban. I think they're, and what was sad is like their stock was tanking, but like all the people that you were talking about, like the truck drivers and stuff earlier, like those people were like out of work and they're like, oh, okay, I guess I don't have a job now.
Gotta go work for Taylor Swift.
Exactly. Where the money is.
For 100 grand a year, I would do that.
Yeah, totally.
Let's see. What else?
Call us, Taylor. We're available.
I'll drive a truck.
For 100 grand, I would do
throw some Bud Light in the back. It's fine. Just come on. I'll be good.
Another big story. This was so weird to me just because I know stuff happens in Hawaii, but the Hawaii wildfires, I mean, that wiped out like an entire town. I don't know how it started, but I think what the interesting part.
Space lasers started it, Chuck. Space lasers.
Okay, that's how it was. Yeah.
Yes.
But so the interesting part to me was this is another thing, kind of like the Titanic thing where people like hate rich people. Because Oprah and The Rock got on TV and they're like, hey guys, like we're trying to raise money for the victims of Hawaii. Like, can you give money?
Yeah.
And people were like so pissed that they were asking for money. They're like, why don't you give the money? You guys are millionaires. I think Oprah's a billionaire.
Yes.
And I think they only gave 10 million, which
10 million, I think. Yeah.
It's almost like it's better to like lay low and just not say anything than to try to like do a fundraiser and start off with 10 million. I don't know.
Well, and also it's like a weird thing where if you're that famous, you probably should hire someone who's kind of famous, but not you, Oprah or The Rock, you know, like someone like a Dylan Mulvaney or, you know, whatever, like somebody who's not Oprah, but still can mobilize and like reach a large audience, just because then they're not going to get heat for how much they personally are or aren't giving. Mm-hmm. I mean, not to be like a business advisor on this, but
do you think that she should have given more though? Like, I mean, just, I don't know how much money she actually has.
Yeah, probably. I mean, sure. I don't know. You know?
I mean, if like, Taylor Swift gave 50 million, Oprah could have done 500 million. Come on.
Did Taylor Swift give 50 million to the Hawaii thing?
No. To her workers.
Because the thing I think with Oprah is that she had a house like down the street from where this happened or something. So that's why people were saying like, and she closed off her gate or something and like didn't like, wasn't like, and I think I read this thing today about Hawaii, how like a lot of the natives are basically being priced out of Hawaii. They can't afford it. And like they're from Hawaii. And so that's like a whole nother issue, which is like kind of sad to me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I have a friend that's there right now, actually, with his son. He's in Kauai this week. But yeah, it's and that's been happening for years that the property values have gotten driven up. And obviously the cost of living is expensive there because has to either be grown or flown in.
Except, I just remember from going there that they have bananas that taste like apples.
Really?
Yeah. They call them apple bananas, and they're so good.
What kind of witchcraft is that? Like,
it's just good. And like,
they're from volcanoes, Chuck. Come on. They're great.
But that, I think that coconuts and pineapples don't have to be, you know, whatevered in. And so that's like very plentiful, and everything else is like $1 million, you know, like to
eat. Taking back to what you said, Chuck, should they have given more? I mean, you're damned if you do, damned if you don't. So if you only give $10 million, well, why didn't you give $50 million? Well, if they gave $50 million, why didn't they give $100 million? They could afford to do it. So I think Liz is right. They should have just hired a PR person to get punched in the face so that they could have funded it and been like, hey, we support this venture. No one needs to know we're funding it.
Yeah,
And that's the sad part of society, because people are afraid to put themselves out there, especially if they're not not equipped, because I'd say Oprah and The Rock are probably equipped to deal with stuff, but it, just to face the criticism that you do, because someone's always going to be out there throwing you, you know, under the bus for doing good things. And that's probably the danger in of the problem of living in a technology world where, you know, there's so much at people's fingertips that people have enough free time to sit there and just micro analyze. Well, what's Liz doing with her life? I know, but that's, you know, it's just ridiculous that it's like people have that within them to just dig apart other people.
Oh, I think totally.
It makes them feel better. But in the end, they're not feeling better. You know, they're just, they have their own issues going on, and that's how they lash out to other people.
Yeah.
What I just worry. I feel like there's a lot of people right now in America and maybe the world that are just struggling. I don't know. Like my mom, she's okay, but she was in the hospital a couple weeks ago, and I went to the ER room, and it was so sad. There was just people that were there, and they were like wailing, and you know, they're just in pain. And then I just, you know, you drive down the street and there's homeless people, and I just feel like it's, maybe I'm just more aware of all this stuff. Maybe there's always been terrible things in the world, but it seems like there's a lot more lately. Like, people are struggling, and I don't know what the solution is. Like, I feel like I want to do something. I feel like I'm very blessed in a lot of ways. But I feel like, how do we do? Like, cause to me, it seems like it's a lot of people who just, they don't have their lives together. There's a lack of ambition, and they're struggling with something, and then they get wrapped up in the drugs or whatever, and then they just give up on life. And I don't know. It's like, I want to help people, but I don't even know how to help people that are struggling.
I think, Chuck, that you need to give $10 million.
So Liz will manage that money for you, Chuck.
Yeah, I need to get $10 million and then give it away.
Yeah, well, but I mean, to add a cheesy, maybe hopeful note, maybe, you know, 2024 is part of the answer. Like, I think you're right. There is a lot that's terrible and wrong, and you know, hope in the future is like the best thing that we have. I mean, it's kind of the only thing that we have. So, you know, maybe next year is amazing.
Well, I think a lot of it is how you, life is what you make of it. And so, not belittling what's going on with people, that there's a homeless problem, there's a drug problem in our country, but I think people see in their, and I do it too, so it's not, you know, me not pontificating, but we see in our narrow little window of what life is. I study history, especially for some of the books I've done and some of the other things. Mm. Read about the Depression, you know, go back even further and read about, you know, the Black Plague and all these things. So the hardships of humanity have always been there. Now they get accentuated because we're in a digital age where, you know, if Liz says something clever, or Liz says something controversial, the whole world could know about it in the matter of 5 minutes or, you know, whatever. We have the capacity. It's like I was somewhere the other night. I was pulling out of my house, going to a grocery store, working out, whatever. Didn't have the kids that night. And my phone starts going crazy. And I knew the sound because what it was an Amber Alert. And of course, I look at it. Plus, you have to look at it just to turn it off because you're driving. Now, if you know, years ago, if someone got kidnapped, you might hear about it in the news a week later, if it even made national news. Well, now if there's a kidnapping, every person within, you know, a 4-state radius is going to know, they're driving a silver Nissan with a North Carolina plate and they look like Chuck. You know, we know to look for Chuck now. Chuck grabbed a kid. So
Yeah.
It's just, I don't know. Technology is an amazing thing. And I think it's made our lives better. But the flip side of that is it's also caused a lot of stress, anxiety, and everything else, because there's very rarely quiet in any of our lives. Our lives are always noisy now. Mm. So that's, I think, I think big picture, we want to get back to where, man, why are things so tough? We have to find a way to just not lose the technology, but we have to way of simplifying things. Maybe that might help. Chuck, figure how to do that for us. Well, give Liz the 10 million and then figure the other problem out. So.
And now I'm getting into the real serious stuff here. And so I don't want to put Liz on the spot, but
yeah,
this whole thing with like, and you can say no comment if you want. I totally respect that. But I mean, I guess I'm kind of naive because I know there's obviously a lot of wars and things that go on, but this whole thing with Hamas and Israel, I have friends who are Muslim. I have friends who are Jewish. And, you know, I just talked to a friend the other day and her profile picture on Facebook was blacked out. And I said, oh, why is your picture blacked out? And she's like, it's for Palestine because we're not supposed to speak about it or something like that. And I was like, well, that's terrible. But then I see also, I mean, just this like anti-Semitic behavior. I mean, I don't know what else you would describe it as. Mm-hmm. I don't want to pick a side. I want to support everybody. Yeah. And I feel like it's interesting because I think about like the Vietnam War, and I wasn't obviously alive for that, but you look back at pictures and it was like the people were holding up signs of like peace signs and like, you know, stop the war and all this. And now I feel like people are like, they want everyone to take a side. Like, are you on Israel or Palestine? And I just want peace. Is that crazy to say?
No, I don't think it's crazy to say. First of all, I think it's hilarious that, as you were saying, like, I don't want to put you on the spot, and if you have no comment, it's fine. And I 100% thought you were going to ask me about Matt Rife. And then you asked me about...
What, do you know Matt Rife or what?
No, I don't know him personally. I know people who know him and like, you know, ran around similar circle. Yeah, sure. I mean,
we can talk about that too. That's a great one.
Next subject.
No. But
we'll go from Hamas to Matt Rife.
I noticed that, like, because I look... Yeah. I kind of like want to know what your opinion is, because, and I feel like I missed something. Like, I look at your social media and I'm like, what is Liz saying about this? Like, she's Jewish. Like, does she have an opinion? Like, what should I do? I don't know. I don't know what to do. So I'm just curious what you think.
Totally. No, I'm happy to say what
and
I
also,
think.
I mean, yeah. With the whole, like, the college president, I think that's what really horrified me, was seeing the college presidents not. People are saying, so they're asking about like the genocide of Jews, and the college presidents are not going, of course we, you know, denounce that, like that is disgusting. And I was just going, my jaw was dropping watching that. And I'm going, these are the people in charge of our higher education. It's just confusing to me. Am I missing something? Like, I don't know.
I don't know. I don't think you're missing something. I think that there's just a lot happening at the same time in terms of like the flurry of news around it. And also each side, you know, has a real distrust of the other. And also this is like a really, really, really old conflict. And so that's the part that is, so I am pro-Israel. My grandparents are Zionists, like literally in 1948. And so I have 4 out of 4 Holocaust survivor grandparents on both sides of my family. And so the desperate need for a homeland that's safe is something that I've like really felt in a visceral way from my entire life. I have family that's still in Israel. I have cousins in the reserves, you know, so it's all very near to my life and also to my heart. And like whenever, you know, it's like, it's of course I want a ceasefire. I also, and I, of course I want peace, and maybe there isn't. And of course, like I do. And I recognize that like, what happened on October 7th was a really huge breach of a kind of security that stabilized this really unstable conflict and people living together basically not at war, but in a way that is like about to erupt for a long time. And I think also that, like, you know, people who are close to Israel, and I don't purport to be like super close to Israel, but I've said my connections and, you know, I don't live there, obviously. But, you know, the idea of like Israelis criticizing the Israeli government had been happening for a really long time before this. And so it's not that, like, you know, I think there's a lot of conflating what is wrong, you know, because like there, I do believe that when people are anti-Israel, that it gets to be anti-Semitic pretty quick, and that it has in right now, and especially on college campuses. I think that that's like really scary. And if I had a kid in college, I would be really, really scared. And I, you know, I mean, I can't even tell you how many anti-Semitism WhatsApp chats I'm on. I feel like I am in the FBI. Like, that's the level of like news alerts that I'm getting all the time. You know, Jewish kids who can't leave their dorm room, who are, you know, hiding in the library. I think that was like a Cooper Union story. I mean, it's just like, you know, there's a lot of this stuff, and it's really, really scary, and it feels really imminent. And it feels like everything we've been taught to think is about to happen because it happened to our grandparents. And I think that, like, you know, without hostages coming home, the idea that like this could happen again tomorrow is something that's very real. And so when, you know, I haven't like joined Jewish Voices for Peace, for example, an organization that, you know, has a ceasefire goal, but hasn't kept like the return of the hostages top of mind. Because for me, that is a real sticking point. And, you know, the people who I know who are very pro-Israel, that's their sticking point. I do know a couple people who are very pro-Israel in a way that I'm like, I don't think I believe that. In terms of, you know, there's a kind of like, we have to assert a kind of dominance. And this is like, they're not even Israeli. It's just like people who I know who I'm like, huh, wow. Like, just because there's, you know, whenever there's a spectrum of opinions, you're going to find people all along it. And that's definitely an outlier, but it's like a person I can think of. And most of the people who I know who are pro-Israel, who are anti-Semitism, who are Zionists and say they're Zionists, are not advocating for any kind of killing. It's a matter of, listen, like, we don't want to die, and we don't want you to die, but like, don't step on us, you know. And it's that. So that's my opinion on it.
Okay, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I just wanted to know and hear. I mean, yeah. I just feel like I need to hear from real people and not like talking heads on the news or whatever. So that's interesting. Sure. Thank you for sharing.
Yeah. Yeah, of course. Yeah.
Eric, do you have an opinion on this?
Yeah. So I don't have the connection Liz has, but I definitely have been a student of history for years. I know a lot about that part of the world. Just, I've had friends deployed over there, militarily and stuff. So I've actually, my friend that I mentioned earlier that's in Hawaii at the moment, he had recounted to me the other day, he was texting me while he was flying out there with his son. And he told me he got a phone call. And I said, how'd you get a phone call on a plane? And he said, well, it was through WhatsApp. And the guy that called him was a friend of his, Evan, who I've met as well, who is Jewish and is in Jerusalem. Mm-hmm. And so he had been telling me some stories the last month of how, you know, when the sirens go off, they have to go to their bunker and just what life's been like. So, yeah, it's hard because, you know, you be a talking head and say what your opinion is, and your opinion doesn't matter.
Right.
I'm for neither side killing each other.
Yeah.
From one standpoint, from a security standpoint, when people come into your country and massacre a whole lot of people, you don't just go, hey, that sucked, don't do that again.
Of course.
Hamas is 100% a terrorist organization. If their charter is out there, you can Google it and read the charter of what the purpose of their charter is: to annihilate Israel.
Yeah.
They want Israel to not be there anymore. Well, Israel has the right to be there, as far as I care. For us, Jerusalem wasn't a place they just made up and said, hey, we're going to go live in Jerusalem. Read history of seeing when Israel's lived in Jerusalem. It's been millennia, you know, been a long time. Do Palestinians have the rights to be there? Sure. I think you make an argument So we find a way to coexist, not kill each other. Mm-hmm. And then it gets, you know, then you start getting, well, should they do a ceasefire? Should the hostages come back? And that's where it's out of my pay grade. Mm-hmm. I do think Israel has to stand up for itself for sure. But on the flip side, killing any innocent Palestinian, the scary part of that, first of all, you can't justify it. I know Hamas is setting a lot of that up because, hey, we'll just put a bunch of our soldiers in a hospital in a basement.
Right. Right.
Well, how do you get rid of the soldiers without at least invading the hospital or doing something? So that makes it really, really sticky fast. But it's just the one thing I will say, too, and it's once you kill one innocent person, how many of those family members of that innocent person want to then get retribution? So that's where it almost becomes just lobbing missiles and bullets at each other indefinitely. Mm-hmm. Got to be a way to stop it. I'm not smart enough to figure out what that is, but I know laying down your arms and saying, okay, don't do that again, isn't going to work.
And that's, I think that's really well said, Eric. And that's the tricky part. And it's also like, you know, Israel has, and I know, you know, the U.S. has also funded part of this, which is like something that people are up in arms about. But there's a lot of defense that Israel has. So the Iron Dome, you know, I read somewhere the other day, I don't know if you saw this, but like that, you know, the number of Hamas rockets that have been intercepted is like, you know, in the tens of thousands, like some crazy number where it's thousands, like
thousands. Yes.
Yeah. So, you know, it's a question also of like, okay, well, what are you funding? And is the casualty differential a function of that rather than like either side warring actively? Mm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's just, it's such a, and maybe too, it's like, it goes back to what you were saying before, Eric, about the technology. Cause I feel like before a few years ago, like I just kind of had my head in the sand and I didn't know about it. I'm sure there's been tons of wars that have been going on and I just didn't know about it. But now I feel like it's with Twitter and Instagram and all this stuff, like at TikTok.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm seeing the footage and it's just horrifying. I mean, and like I said, even the college presidents, their take and the stuff that's going on in America, the protests and things are, like you said, Liz, it's like, it's scary. And I'm not Jewish, but I mean, I'm scared for Jewish people. I'm like, I don't like that. I don't want anyone to feel unsafe in America, especially. And it's just, it's
and
sad.
You know, it's also, you know, I also am sensitive. Like there were those Muslim, I think it was like three boys who died in Michigan. Is that right? Something happened, but it was also like, I'm always just, something. Yeah, it was.
It's like after 9/11, it was like, people just were like, would grab a Middle Eastern person right. and beat them up or something like that somehow.
I mean, and I just want to say, you know, that like, I mean, I don't want anyone to die. I think like one of the things that I guess bothers me about some of the opinions that are around like on social media is just like, one thing I know is that I don't know how to solve the Middle East peace crisis. Like it's definitely beyond what I know how to do. Right. And so the idea of like, you know, people I know who are like, we have to do it this way. I'm like, I'm not saying that, you know, Netanyahu is a perfect guy or like, I'm not saying that anybody is like amazing in this fight, but I definitely know that I'm not going to solve it. Mm-hmm. So the idea of like, again, everybody deserves a right to speak their opinion, et cetera. But sometimes I'm just like, what? Like, I don't know how you are so certain that the information that you're getting is correct, that, you know, whatever's happening in the way that you see it and that this is the solution. I don't know. I find that kind of arrogance to be off-putting, especially in the kind of conflict that this is, which is really old and really deep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Going and threatening Israeli Jewish students in a college university or, you know, anything well, that's the thing the last that couple
me.
Years.
Yeah, that's the thing that bothers me the most is just, I think most people, whether you're Israeli or Palestine or whatever, like, you're just trying to get by. You're just trying to pay your bills, whether you live there or you live in America or whatever. Like, most people are just trying to get by. And I don't, it sucks that, that they're getting caught in the middle of this. The people, the up top, the leaders that are making these decisions to attack or not attack. And now they're getting caught in the crossfire. And it's just like, I don't know. I don't like seeing that. I feel like most people are probably all on the same page. We probably all want peace because we all want to just be able to get home to our families and be safe and not have to worry about getting shot or murdered or bombed or any of those things.
Yeah. I mean, I guess the only footnote to that is like, when you are a terrorist organization, you might not. And so that's like the part of it that's trickier to fight against.
Yeah.
Yeah. But isn't part of that too, that's, I feel like speaking up. I feel like if more people spoke up and, you know what I mean? I feel like right now it's like the loudest people are the crazy people that I'm scared of.
Sure.
And nobody's saying anything. Yeah. So that's the only reason I bring it up, just to,
totally.
Get that out there and just feel like, okay, I'm glad we're all kind of on the same page. It seems like, and I'm sure most people are, I hope.
I think so.
I think so too. And then, you know, sometimes like the effect of social media is like, it amplifies certain opinions and voices. And, that can be scary if that's what you're seeing.
Well, the algorithms feed off that. Like if you, like Facebook, I mean, there's been documented proof of it where Facebook, you know, if, they know what your interests are based on, you know, different websites you go to and all that. So then you'll just start getting feeds from people that are saying down with Israel or, you know, or we're pro Palestine or whatever. We're pro Israel. You'll get that. It's like TikTok does that. TikTok will just feed you. Exactly. And it also then feed in of like the negative about sides that you might, you know, take issue with. And they'll just make you amplify it. And
you guys both have TikTok.
What's that?
You guys both have TikTok?
Liz dances on TikTok every day. I watch her videos.
I have it. I rarely engage with it, but maybe more in 2024.
I have it. I post stuff for books. I can't imagine it's actually sold a book yet, but so I'll put something out once a day or once every few days and I'll get, you know, a couple hundred people like, I guess, view it. And does that mean it sold a book? Probably not. So
is that something you see? I worry about all this shit. I worry about way too much. I worry about like, I have TikTok too. And I'm like, oh, is this like, people say it's Chinese spyware. And then like, remember that? That's another big story of the year was like the Chinese spy balloon and stuff. Like, are you guys worried about China?
It came near my house.
Is really? It?
I shot at it. No, I didn't shoot it. I was thinking of it because my neighbor said he was going to. Yes. It came through the Carolinas. Yes.
So what does it spy on?
They said it was just a weather balloon.
Okay.
I don't know.
I think it was trying to see a bunch of Southerners sunbathing naked in their backyards, I think.
I have friends that say, oh, China's going to do like an EMP and they're going to, and I'm like, no, because I think we're like their best customers. So like, why would you like do something to damage your best customers?
We owe them trillions of dollars, Chuck. I don't think they're going to fry us because they're not going to get the trillions back.
Now, Russia, that might be a little bit different. I don't know, but. Yeah. It just feels like it's a weird time right now. It feels like we're kind of at the end of America almost. Like it feels like the end of the Roman civilization. Like if Eric, you know, history, like isn't there some parallels between the end of the Roman civilization and the end of America right now?
Republics normally don't last too many hundreds of years. Put it that way.
Huh?
Yes.
I hope that we can just, my friend always says like, this whole thing, it's a house of cards. It's held up with duct tape. I just need to last another 50 years and then I'll be dead.
I just need to have a couple books hit and get a movie deal and I can buy my island in the South Pacific and everyone's welcome to come as long as they pass the vetting process.
Great.
How hard is it to get, I mean, your book is doing well, right? I mean, is it pretty hard to get a book deal, a movie deal with it from a book? Like what is the percentage or do you even look at that?
Very low. Well, yeah, it's very low. I've not done much with it. I'm actually supposed to get the rights back to the first book soon, especially getting it back 6 months ago and the publisher never did what he said. So it's supposed to now be this month. So nothing's ever been done for the movie rights. I'll probably pursue that next year because I have some connections, loose connections. That's kind of like the big, you know, that's the big elephant in the room. People think, oh, if I just get a write a book and or whatever your creative endeavor is. But if you write a book and I get a movie deal, then I'm, you know, I'm going to be sitting in Fiji, you know, drinking Bud Light and enjoying life. It's like, you're lucky. And I'm sure Liz can talk about it on the comedy side. You're lucky if you get some money on your first movie deal, and you might get money for your book, but you're not going to get a lot, chances are. And you get more when it gets greenlit, which so they'll give you money for a book. And The Body Band was my first book. So a production company's interested in it. They'll say, hey, we want to give you X amount of dollars for the rights to produce something. Yay, great. Are they actually going to produce it?
Right.
Very, 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 very few that ever are.
They're just covering their bases just in case it does blow up.
Yeah. Or they want to buy, or they find something they like that they think they're going to produce. They'll buy all the other books that are around that type of a story to keep other production companies from producing a similar book.
That can happen. Yeah.
It's like, this is everything's House of Cards. There's comedy House of Cards. There's Hollywood House of Cards. There's book publishing. Everything's a whole big House of Cards. So
we talked about this last time on my episode with you, is that you were saying that anything that's like really goal driven success, you're not super into that because it reminded you of when you worked at the law firm. And so you're not pursuing things like aggressively. You just want to do comedy and just, like, you're happy just doing comedy, what you're doing right now.
Yeah. I mean, I think there is truth to that. And I'm also like trying to get over some of it, you know, just because I think get over the association to like a past life and the idea that just because it's about, I don't know, increasing an Instagram following, that it doesn't have to be inherently evil, you know? Mm-hmm. I just want to continue to be me. And I do have friends who have been able to be like, you know, really successful and seemingly continue to like do the things that they want to do, to be creatively driven and independent. But that is really important to me. So it's something that I continue to, I guess, wrestle with.
Like, how many shows are you still doing? It seems like whenever you post your tour dates or whatever, you're always doing like so many shows.
It's a lot.
Shows a week or something, right?
Oh yeah. Yeah. No, totally. It's a lot. But, and it's only going to be more cause like I've never done a headlining tour, but I will, in early 2024.
Really? So, are you coming to Phoenix?
I want to, cause I knew you were going to ask, which I so love and appreciate. But it's not on the list now. It's not to say that it can't get there. I just don't know anyone in Phoenix other than you. So at this point,
you have to sell a show out for her, Chuck. Come on.
Listen, I've done shows where I basically know one person and then like have sold out a show because of that. But basically at this point, like I booked the whole tour myself. I have reps, but I actually did this before I did. And so it's all based on like I featured at a club and did well and like got off stage and the guy who owns the club is like, we're going to have you headline. And I'm like, great. That's one weekend. And it's just like a number of those to get to a tour. And I don't know anyone in Phoenix yet. So that's where I'm at with it.
Okay. I'll try to make some connections for you. Okay. I know like one comedian here. I don't know if he would have any power or anything. Yeah. Like, you need to know the club owners or other comedians or.
I think it could be other comedians because I'm not like a snob in terms of like what I'll headline, you know, cause as long as I get to do the hour, then I will go.
Can you just like email the club owner and be like, hey, can I come into your comedy club? And then
you can, and okay. They will not write you back for sure. But
I get podcast guests is I just email people and it's like, usually it is a no, but like every once in a while people say, yeah.
Yeah. Well, I think it's like with comedy club owners, you know, and this, I just want to be sensitive, number one, to time, and number two, to news items. And we mentioned Matt Rife. And so I feel like Matt Rife is a good thing. I mean, to the extent it's news, you know, he announced a huge tour and he's a very controversial, figure in comedy now. Is because
he really that, well, because he commented, he talked shit to some 6-year-old girl. Is that what happened?
Does that happen?
Yeah, I think it's like some girl like trolled. I don't know if he knew.
Oh, really?
The girl was only 6 years old, but she said some comment and made fun of him or something. And he said, "Your mom buys tickets to my show with her OnlyFans money," or something like that. Great. And then it came out that he was talking shit to a 6-year-old girl. So is that the controversy, or was there something else that happened?
No, I guess it's maybe like comedians on comedians, but like the controversy being like, you know, number one, I think he had this like really misogynistic joke in his Netflix special. And then a lot of comedians are just like, he shouldn't have gotten a Netflix special, and then are like, see, it's not that good. Or I didn't watch it, so I really don't have an opinion because I didn't watch it. And
but isn't part of it too, it's because he's really good looking and girls like him?
Yeah, I guess. I mean, you know, like, he's not my type, so I don't know. Yeah, but
Liz anyway. Is like, he's not that good looking.
That's the critique of him, is that he's just a good looking guy. And so, and like, there's probably some female comedians that have the same critique, that they say, oh, she got the special because she's a hot chick. And
but I think actually, I mean, yeah, that is part of it. But I actually think like at least the comedians are like, he is really good with these like crowd work clips, but like, can he really sustain an hour? And I guess, I don't know what the literal consensus is, but like, as far as my algorithmic feed seems to suggest, the answer to that would be a no. But again, I didn't watch it. So okay. Normally, so, yeah.
Mm-hmm. That is the controversy. Say, so
I've seen his clips, and that's how I knew who he was. And I know people that have bought tickets to go see him. I think they're going to the Richmond show. Okay. I did start watching the Netflix special because I don't watch tons of comedy, but I watch a bunch of them. And, you know, Chappelle's my favorite. It's always been my favorite. I love Dave Chappelle. People, I know, very controversial in some circles, for sure. But comedians' job is to make people laugh. I don't really see it as there being like too many lines to that. Your job is to elicit a laugh. Some people are going to think it's funny. Some's not.
Yeah.
I don't know how long the special is for Matt. I'm assuming it's an hour. Most of them are.
I guess. Yeah.
I think I made it like 15 minutes and I was like, it was boring.
Yeah.
And he said that. I saw an interview with him a couple months, maybe a month or so back. And he said, well, my special is not crowd work. And that's what people are coming to expect, but that's not all I do.
Right.
But I think that's going to disappoint a lot of people because the crowd work, whether you like it or not, it's what's created this mystique about him.
And
there are some people that are really good at crowd work. Two of my favorite comedians, Sam Morril, I don't know if you know him, and Tim Dillon. Yeah. Those guys are just, I feel like they're just funny people. Like if you were just like went to like dinner with them, you'd be laughing your ass off the whole time.
Sure. Mm-hmm. Sure. Yeah, totally. Yeah. So anyway, I just brought it back there because it's a news item. But for my tour personally, you know, I've had experiences at clubs and I have a date to tape my next hour. So I was like, okay, I'm going to create a tour leading up to the taping. And so that's kind of like my beginning of 2024. Hopefully that's the plan. And so, you know, in the next like couple weeks, I have like a poster that's going to reveal the tour dates. You know, it's not a video in Ashton Kutcher's house or whatever it was with Matt Rife. But it's like my tour.
But that's so cool that you're doing it. You're doing the dream. I mean, you know, we're all doing what we love. I mean, writing books, doing comedy, doing podcasts. And, you know, it's maybe we're not at that Taylor Swift level yet. But I mean, it's fun to do these things. And that's why I do it. I'm not trying to. I mean, of course, it would be nice to have that level of success. But I really like just doing podcasts. I've always loved
it. Well, do what you like in life. I mean, so much of life is a lot of times what you have to do to get by. But man, you better find some stuff that you enjoy. And if you can find it as a career, really great. Pursue that. But man, I mean, you know, and that's
the, and I like think that's saying. The biggest problem going back to what I, not to get like all depressing, but I feel like that is the biggest issue in America. I feel like there's too many people that are lost. And if they found something, not everybody can be a Taylor Swift or whatever, but like if they found something that they could, you know, look forward to each day. I feel like there's a lot of people that are just lost. And I would love for people to find that. Cause I feel like I found it. And I'm like, oh, I finally found something I'm good at. And now I want everyone else to find their thing, whatever that is.
Yeah. I agree.
Yeah,
me too.
Cool. How much do you have to go, Liz? Sorry, I know you had a time.
Yeah, I do. Okay. But I so loved getting to talk to you. I always do. And Eric, you too. Like, really.
Nice to meet you, Liz.
Yeah.
If you're coming out south, let me know if you're going to do a comedy
show.
Where
are you in the south?
I'm about an hour outside of Charlotte.
Okay. All right. I have a couple North Carolina dates, but not Charlotte.
Okay.
So
if you ever come towards Asheville, I'm in this triangle between Asheville, Charlotte, and Greenville, South Carolina. I'm like right in the middle.
So
I can get to all spots in an hour.
That's helpful.
And how close are you coming to Phoenix? I mean, are you going to go to like Tucson or Vegas or LA? Maybe I'll just
can't release your dates yet, Chuck. Did you not hear that?
LA. I'll tell you. Yeah, the LA. But also like we can work on, you know, getting, I will come to you. You know, we should meet after all of this virtual time.
Yeah, it would be cool. It'd be fun to see. I've seen videos and listen to your album and stuff. But yeah, it'd be cool to see you live, meet in person, give you a hug.
So. Yes, I would love that. And you too, Eric.
Thank you, Liz. I did go to the Comedy Cellar this year, actually.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I was up in, I came up to New York to see Bono. He was doing a show about his book, actually. But so I got out of that and I'm in the city by myself. And I've been to the city a ton of times. I grew up in Connecticut. So very comfortable in the city. And I'm like, man, I don't feel like going back to the hotel. Hotels are depressing. And I went down to what's that? East Village I guess it was East Village. And I just went and got the line and I got in like the 1 a.m. or 2 a.m. show, whatever it was.
Great.
Fabulous experience.
Yeah.
I loved it. So.
It's the awesome. Best.
Well, thanks, guys. I'll get this
thank
out.
Thank you.
ASAP. And thank you for both
thank
doing
you.
This. I appreciate it. And happy holidays.
And
happy
to you.
And Merry Christmas.
And to you.
Good job with your year, Chuck. Good 2023 roundup.
Yes. And,
kill it in 2024.
All right, all of us.
All of us. Yes. Thank you.
Figuratively, not literally.
Right.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Bye. Thank you. Bye.
Bye-bye. Thank you for taking the time to listen to the full podcast episode. Please help support our guests by following them on social media and purchasing their products, whether it be a book, album, film, or other thing. And if you have a few extra dollars, please consider donating it to their favorite charity. If you want to support the show, you can like, share, and comment on this episode on social media and YouTube. And if you want to go the extra mile, you can give us a rating or review on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or Google Podcasts. Finally, make sure you're subscribed to the show on YouTube for the video versions and other exclusive content. We appreciate your support. Have a great rest of your day and shoot for the moon.